Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We are today in lesson 255. And we are also in chapter 37, verse 11. Last time we were talking about the part that Bezalel was playing in putting together the tabernacle with Oholiab, who was his assistant, or worked with him. And all the workers that they had together, and all the items that they were putting together, first God gave them the instructions to begin all the outside of the tabernacle itself. Once all the walls were erected, they could put it together. Then they began inside, out of view. And God didn't want it to be on display to create the inner furnishings, that is, of the temple, which is the altar and the ark and all the other things that people were not supposed to look at. There was an altar that Israel could look at. That was the altar for Israel, and then there was an altar for the Lord. And that, later on, once it was placed in its place, in the inside court of the tabernacle, only the Levites and the priests could see it. Israel had no access to it. That was the altar of incense, and the altar that they were the sacrifice to the Lord, and not for the sins of men. And then the ark, and obviously all the other items that went into it. And one of them we mentioned was the crown. Well, actually, there were several crowns, as we mentioned. And it's interesting. Crown in Hebrew has three words, basically. One is zer, which he's using here. He's not using the word crown. That is keter, the usual one. Keter is usually the term that is used for crown. And keter basically has to do with the crown that you put on the head of a man, and it comes from the word to encircle, lekater. And so obviously the crown is a circle, you put it on the head, and so that's what they call it, keter. But he's using here mostly for all the decorations that he did all around, which are called in English crown, translated to crown. He's using the word in Hebrew zer, and zer generally, you generally talk about things that are made, that's generally, not all the time, things that are made of natural things. You know, for example, the crown of thorn that they put around the head of Jesus Christ, that's called zer. You see, it's crown in English, but it's zer in Hebrew. And, you know, you can use it also in terms of metal, but the case of, you know, often is for natural things. So here he's using zer because there were decorations that resembled, let's say, leaves or branches or things like that. And so it is called zer. And when it's not a decoration, then it's called keter, which is what you put on the head of a king. And as far as the high priest was concerned, they used another terminology for the crown, and that was nezer, which is close to zer. But they use the word Nezer. It was called the Holy Nezer. And the Keter itself has an awful lot of spiritual meaning. Obviously, an awful lot of the items here have a lot of spiritual meanings, and we cannot necessarily go into that, because that would take an awful long time. And that's why we suggest that people who want to go more into detail, into an understanding at least, as far as man has an understanding, go through some sources like Edersheim. He talks about the temple and all the items in it. He's got two or three works that he had written on the subject. And Edersheim was a Jew that was converted to a Christian. And obviously he had an awful lot of knowledge and understanding. He was a good researcher and had a lot of background in Judaism and knowledge of that time and history and the law and the Talmud and the Mishnah and all that. So he put all those things together for those who are interested in the details. But in terms of the crown, you know, we can bring some points here, because that's in one sense, you might say, the most important item. You know, this is what you put on the head of the king, the crown, which is symbolic of his authority. It's not, in other words, God is not using anything just in a meaningless fashion. Everything has to have very meaningful purpose. And when Christ, later on, we read in the book of Revelation, receives many crowns, you know, how does a man carry many crowns? You know, today you say, well, he's a man that is wearing many hats. Obviously, we're talking about responsibilities and different functions that he's going to perform. You know, he's a king, he's a high priest, and many of the things that he's going to do, he's going to be the judge, and several other things. So that's why he's receiving many crowns. But the crown itself, the keter, all is there. All the nezer, you know, the nezer on the high priest is there on decorations, and sometimes, you know, even on the head of a man, like the thorn of the crown of thorns. And for example, when the Romans, you know, where all the Greeks were competing in the arena, the winner got ezer. You see, they didn't say keter, you know, they said ezer, because ezer means made of natural things, and that's what they get. Sort of a crown of flowers, you know, with leaves and branches, you know, and put it all together. And so that's the terminology. You see, they would never use a keter for it, which is basically only made of metal, gold or whatever, including the stones. So these things, you know, the crown and the stones in them had an awful lot of meaning, biblically speaking, for God, and they were not just vain things. And you're going to see an awful lot of that terminology, not only here in the tabernacle, but into the future, into the heaven in Jerusalem, into Jerusalem before that, into the city itself, you see, into the terminology that God is going to use about His own people, calling them the jewels, the stones, you know, the lively stones, precious stones, and so forth, which, you know, are going to be placed in His crown, which is, again, symbolically, they're going to be His bride, His people, the ruling government. And so, you know, this terminology of Keter or Zer or Nezer symbolize all these things. In Malachi, for example, Malachi 3:16, God is speaking about His saints, those who fear Him and obey His voice, you know, and speak about Him often and are faithful in contrast to the others. He said they're going to be, you know, in the day that He comes to gather all of His people, jewels. That means they're going to be jewels in His crown. You see, in His crown is symbolic of authority, of His function, and where, and the saints are going to be, hopefully, you know, all of us, and those who lived in the past and those who are still coming in the future, are going to be those jewels in the crown of Jesus Christ. In other words, member of His ruling party, you know, the government. As I said, you know, those who overcome, just like I did, you know, I sit on the throne of my Father, and you're going to sit on my throne. You see? Now, we're not all going to sit in one chair. That's not what He means. What He means is we're going to share authority with Him, just like He's sharing authority with the Father. And so we're going to be the stones, and the stones are the most precious items in the crown itself, which is made of gold. But, you know, the stone, if it is diamond, obviously it will be more worth more than gold and many other precious stones. Some stones may not be as precious. And so this is what you read in Malachi 3:16 to 18. And then Proverbs 12:4, we read about a woman, you know, a woman that is obedient, a woman that is fearing God, righteous woman. She is a crown of glory to her husband. You see, instead of, in other words, her function, what she is doing, and what she's making it possible for him to do, is sort of, you know, she's a crown on his head, a crown of glory. Obviously, women who are not obedient to the law of God are not going to be a crown of glory, but something else. And you certainly don't want to put them on your head. And, you know, there is a terminology in the Middle East also, in the culture, you know, I'm going to put you on my head. You know, what do you mean by that? I'm so honored with you. You know, I'm very proud of your functions, of your actions, of your deeds and all that, that I'm going to put you like a crown on my head. And so this is the terminology here of a woman and the bride of Jesus Christ. You see, if we are going to be the virtuous woman that we're supposed to be, you know, spiritually speaking, the bride of Jesus Christ, you know, lively stones, precious stones, righteous, you know, righteous and pure and holy and all those things, we're going to be the crown of our husband, so to speak, Jesus Christ, you know, the ruler. And Proverbs 14:24, he talks about riches, which are the crown of men. You see, for men that either they have character or they don't have character, you know, riches make it possible for them to accomplish a lot. So that's the mark of their authority. And that's what the crown. So, you know, the crown has many meanings. And when you see a lot of crowns here in the building of the tabernacle, you have to understand the symbolism of it. In Proverbs 16:31 again, God speaks about the older people. When they get older, you know, their hair becomes gray and then becomes white. And that's like their crown. And so that's what he's saying. The hoary head, you see, head that is white, and, you know, that shows where should be anyway, wisdom, experience, knowledge, and understanding, and authority, and all those things, and respect and honor. And that's what the hoary head is. Also a crown. And then in 17:6, Proverbs 17:6, it talks about the children. Now the children who are obedient, the children who are many, the children who are healthy and strong, the children who are a credit to the family, it says children's children are a crown to their parents. You see? And if they are not behaving themselves, obviously they are not going to be the crown. You are not going to be proud of them, and you're not going to parade them, you know, or putting them on top of your head, you know, symbolically speaking. And the high priest also, he had a crown, as we shall see later on. Only his was called Nezer, not a Keter or a Zer, but Nezer, the holy Nezer, that is a Nezer HaKodesh, the holy crown. And obviously he had also the breastplate, you know, with the stones, and the stones also are very meaningful. And so you see, oftentimes the stones are not only in different parts of the body of the high priest, on his clothes, in different places like that, or in decorations, but they're also placed in the crown, and that adds even greater splendor to the crown. You see, a lot of crowns had a lot of stones in them. And you read about the crown jewels in England, and that became also a concept. You know, what is a crown jewels? When they talk about it, they talk about the most valued possessions of the land, you know, like state secrets, crown jewels, you know, and somebody is tampering with that. He's tampering, you know, with the crown jewels of the royalty, of the kingdom, of the nation, of the people. You see, and you know, all those things are very symbolic, and they're very meaningful, and they're very much employed here in the building of the tabernacle. And then you read also about Jerusalem, the one of Jesus Christ, and the later one of the Father when he comes down with heaven in Jerusalem. It has a lot of stones. And they're all symbolic, you know, and every tribe is going to have his own stone, and pearls, you know, gates, you know, are made of pearls, and, you know, precious things, and, you know, with the names of the apostles of Jesus Christ, you know, again, symbolic of rule, you see. And the reality is that when God gives us stones or pearls or whatever it may be, it's not only a matter of decoration. It should symbolize our own character. So our character is manifested and is symbolized also by these stones. That's why God uses this terminology, calling us precious stones. And, you know, they are valued a lot, they are precious, and in terms of character, obviously, this is what it means. And so, as we mentioned again, Revelation, Christ has many crowns, and those crowns have a lot of stones in them, symbolically of the saints. We're going to share the same authority, but only because they have the same nature, the same character, the same values, you know, the same traits, you see. Unfortunately, a lot of people, and since the days of old, when they were coronated, you know, to succeed a father or somebody else, whatever it may be, when they received those crowns, it's not because of their character necessarily always. You know, some of them were very, very nasty people. You see, they certainly didn't deserve that honor of that crown and the stones that are in it, because their character was not reflected in it. And God is not going to give us a crown unless our character has, you know, you might say, quote-unquote, earned it by our own overcoming and developing the nature of God and having the qualities and the values of God and His characteristics and all those things. And so when God talks about the saints in Revelation 5, who are going to be also kings and priests, again, all of them are going to have crowns on their heads, just like He talks about the 24 elders who are sitting before the throne of God, the throne of the Father. And you know, every time you read it in Revelation 5 and other places, when they worship God, you know, they cast down their crowns. You see, they take it off, sort of, you know, I take my hat off. You know, that's where this terminology has come from. And the French just say chapeau. It means a hat. That means, I salute you. You see, and that's what they were doing. They're acknowledging the greatness of God. And so, when you do that, when the smaller, lesser kings in a kingdom used to take the crown before the ultimate king of that empire, that's what they were doing by that. Submission and saluting the greatness of the king and acknowledging his greatness in so many ways. With God, all that has to do with character, you see. It's not just power and might and authority, you see. It has to do with the character, because that's the greatest thing about God. Not just the power, but the character that is behind it. And so this is what he promises all of us, that we are literally going to be, well, literally, not literally, spiritually speaking, but we're going to be stones, you see, precious stones, and we're going to have crowns, all that based on character that has been developed. And so based on the character that we have at the time, what we have accomplished in life, that's the way our crown is going to look like and reflect those things. And so this is what basically we read here with the tabernacle, a lot of these terminologies. And so as we proceed here with the description, and think about it, you know, every item that we talk about has a lot of symbolism and a lot of meaning. And so we'll continue now with 37:11. And we read about Bezalel, verse 11, and he overlaid it with pure gold and made thereunto a crown of gold. And the word for crown here is using zer and not keter, which came later on. This is what he put around. In other words, those are decorations that are made of branches, but you know, they're made of gold and flowers and things like that. A sort of decoration, garland, you know, things like that, made of gold. And so he overlaid it with pure gold and made there into a crown of gold round about it. So the crown is encircling the entirety of this item that he's putting together here. A bit the ark, or a bit the altar. It sits all around it, so it's not the same as the one that he put on the head of a man. And so verse 12, and he made unto it a border of a handbreadth. In other words, you know, the crown is sort of a border, you know, that he put all around it. But being a decoration, and with the meaning of the crown, so it's called a crown, not just a border. And so, because for border, he used a different word that is misgeret. And framework, you know. We use that in English, framework, and that comes from that also, misgeret. And so he made a golden crown to the border thereof, round about it. So he's got, you know, this frame all around it, and then a border, and then on top of that he puts the crown. And he cast for it four rings of gold, and put the rings in the four corners that were on the forefeet thereof. And by the way, for crowns, you know, we use it also in dentistry, and a lot of people may have a crown in their own mouth. You know, that's not a place where you think, you know, a crown should be, but that's what they call it, because it's placed right on top of the tooth. So that's where the crown is, right on top. But with God, he's telling us that the crown that he gives us must be accompanied and must be as a result of our own character, or else the crown is meaningless. And verse 13, and he cast for it four rings of gold, and put the rings in the four corners that were on the forefeet thereof, close by the border were the rings, the holders of for the staves to bear the table. And so every item, you see, the priests were taught, you must carry it. Never, you know, just hold it, you know, under your arms or whatever it may be. That would be defiling the, you know, those holy instruments or furnishings of the tabernacle. And that's in essence what happened with Uzzah. You see, when David was trying to bring the ark back to Jerusalem, you see, instead of carrying it as they were supposed to, because the staves were there, you know, the rings were there for that, so they put it on top of the cart, you know, the cow, and obviously it wasn't stable, and so when it moved, you know, he thought he was going to stable it, unless, you know, otherwise it would fall, and God struck him, because you see, they should have realized God gave them the law in detail, the law concerning, you know, the Torah, concerning the tabernacle, and how to handle every tiny little detail, and they must study it day and night, know it by heart, as if it is, you know, their second nature, and never, ever deviate from anything, because every tiny little deviation would have brought the death penalty. You see, you didn't need to transgress the Ten Commandments, you know, the ten major ones, to get the death penalty. Even transgressing those little things were extremely important to God. And the death penalty was required for it, you know, for bringing the wrong kind of fire, as the sons of Aaron had done, and the death penalty was executed against them. And God does not change. A lot of us, you know, are not as careful about the law of God because we haven't studied the law of God in such a methodical manner to understand how important every tiny little detail that proceeded out of the mouth of God is, and the importance that is behind it and the symbolism that is behind it, you see. And so we carelessly, you know, and casually, you know, and nonchalantly, you know, we say, oh, well, you know, just a little thing, you know, I don't think it's important for salvation, I don't need to do that, you see. When Christ said, no, on the other hand, no, that's not the way it works. You know, heaven and earth shall pass away, but not one tiny little aspect of the law, you know, one jot or one tittle shall pass from the law, you see. And so let's never, ever mock God or His law, as the manner of many is, unfortunately, without even realizing it. And they'll come before God and they'll say, hey, we are your people too. And He says, no, I don't know you. You know, with an attitude like you had about my law, you don't belong here. You're a lawless people. Now, He's not saying, you know, you've been killing people or robbing or committing adultery, you see. Now, obviously, many of them have not been doing that. But the mere fact that they have that contempt for the law of God, they say it's done away with, and many things, you know, we don't need to do it, that's old stuff. You see, just give me grace and joy and faith and things like that. You see, that's what they're saying about God. Yeah. We don't care about all those things, you know, that you give us, you know, the tiny little things that are not necessary for salvation. We don't determine that. God does. And He made it very plain. It was necessary for salvation. You see, the life of the sons of Aaron were lost. See, doing what God told them would have saved their lives. Salvation would have been there. And so was with Uzzah. So let's understand that as we study the law of God. God is not a God to be mocked. We must learn to revere and fear Him in every tiny little detail of what proceeded out of His mouth. Never make fun of anything that came out of His mouth, and many do. And yet they call themselves the people of God. Well, the people of God, you see, well, you know, the children of Israel were the people of God and constantly rebellious. So what does it mean, the people of God? It really means nothing unless His word abides in us. And that's exactly what He said. Without me, you can do nothing, and unless my word abides in you, you know, you can do nothing either, and you are nothing too. So let's remember that as we study these things. And verse 16, and He made the vessels which were upon the table, the dishes thereof, and the pans thereof, and the bowls thereof, and the jars thereof, wherewith to pour out of pure gold, that is, pour out the water. Mind you, all these things were given by God from mouth to mouth, you know, to Moses, and He dictated all those things. And I had to produce all these things, and Moses had to supervise them, and Bezalel and Aholiab had to supervise them. Nothing was to be man-made. You see, that is of the invention of man. Everything had to be according to the instructions of God. Verse 17, and He made the candlestick of pure gold, of beaten work, made He the candlestick, and of course there's a lot you can say about it, even its base and its shaft, its cups, its knobs, and its flowers, were of one piece with it. Now, you know, all those things tell you an awful lot about God, and obviously, you know, the purpose of the candlestick, you know, the light. Later on, Christ would talk about the candlestick, speaking about the churches. And He does not allow, you know, the light to be mixed with darkness, because if it is, God calls it vomit, and it's not acceptable to Him. God is not going to accept vomit. He's not going to accept people that come to Him mixed with truth and error, and that's their nature and their character. You see, they would just be rejects. Verse 18, and there were six branches going out of the sides thereof, three branches of the candlestick out of the one side thereof, and three branches of the candlestick out of the other side thereof. And that's what they had to make it. That's what they called the menorah in Hebrew. This country, they call it menorah. It's menorah, whichever way. That's what it is. And that means, menorah means, ner means candle, and menorah means also from the word or, and which means light, you see. So the candle gave light. That was the purpose of it. Verse 19, three cups made like almond blossoms. There was a reason for that. There was a reason for everything in one branch. A knob and a flower, and three cups made like almond blossoms. You're going to find an awful lot of almond type symbolism in the Bible. And three cups, you know, like the almond tree that blossomed, that is a stick of Aaron that blossomed, and that was placed in the ark also. And almond in Hebrew means is shaked, and God uses the terminology with Jeremiah, sort of playing on word. He says to Jeremiah, what do you see? And he says, I see shaked, which means an almond tree. And God says, ani shaked, that means I'm diligent on my work. You see, plain word, shaked, shaked. Of course, you miss it in English. And then later on, Jesus Christ would use this very terminology. He said, watch and pray. Well, he didn't say the word watch, open your eyes and look around and look at prophecy or world events, things like that. That's not the word he was using. He said shkod. Shkod means be diligent. Well, instead of being diligent, people translated it to watch, you see. And the guard at night, in other words, guards even in the temple, they were supposed to watch. What do you mean to watch? They were supposed to be diligent about making sure nobody approaches the temple that has no business being there, you see. And other things like that. And so they were diligent in their job, and that's where the word watchman comes from. Well, shomeris means something else. That means the watchman. But when the word, when God uses this word, with the word shoked, it is not talking about a watchman, that is watching with his eyes. He's talking about somebody who is diligent. So it's a matter of character, not a matter of looking with your eyes and seeing what's happening in the world. And so we develop a whole doctrine around it, a whole philosophy, a whole work around it, the watchman. And we're mixing two totally different concepts, and one is not related to the other. And so we think, watch means, watch world events and pray. Well, that's not what he was saying. He said, be diligent, you see, be busy, active, productive. That's what he's saying, shaked. And so he's, the symbolism is used here very much. And, what happens oftentimes in the translation? A lot of things are lost, and then people come up with a new religion. And verse 20, and in the candlestick were four cups made like almond blossoms, the knobs thereof, and the flowers thereof, and a knob under two branches of one piece with it, and a knob under two branches of one piece with it, and a knob under two branches of one piece with it. And God, basically gives them the instructions. This is what he's recording. You see, this is what Moses is writing down. These words come directly out of the mouth of God. So think about it. Why do we have this attitude of, it's so boring? You sit before God and he's speaking to you and you think it's boring? What does it tell God about our attitude? Think about it when we think that way. Obviously, we do not know God. We do not fear him. We do not revere him. We don't understand what he's talking about. And so we just doze off and go somewhere else. He seems, that's boring stuff. Let me go to something else. And you don't realize that when God speaks, everything that comes out of his mouth, as he said, my words are spirit. A lot of people don't pay attention to that. And they decide in their own mind what is spirit and what is not. And so they lose so much in the process. And these are the people that, think they're rich, they're increasing goods, they have got everything, nobody needs to teach them anything, they know it all. God says, you are blind, you are poor, you are wretched, you are miserable, you are naked. You see? So let's not, we should never ever develop this attitude toward anything that proceeded out of the mouth of God as the boring stuff. They even have that terminology for them, those boring sections there. Well, stand before God and talk to him like that, and where would you be? Think about it. As David said, know before whom you stand. A lot of people don't know before whom they stand, and you can see them when they come to services. It's as if they just came to a social club. They don't know before whom they stand. They have no proper reverence and respect and honor before God. It's sort of something, that they play sort of going to the game, Once a week you go there before God, and in actual reality, they don't feel that way. And they don't act that way. So, let's comprehend that for those of us who have an ear to hear. Let's learn something out of this. Verse 23, and he made the lamps thereof seven, and the tongues thereof. You see, the lamps were seven, not six, but seven. And the tongues thereof, and the snuff dishes thereof, of pure gold. Of a talent of pure gold made he eat. And all the vessels thereof, and he made the altar of incense. That's the one that was inside. The people of Israel could not see it. That was for God only. The priests only, the ones that could go inside. And that's in essence where Zechariah was, the father of John the Baptist. When the angel Gabriel appeared before him, he was offering incense to God. And the people couldn't see him, so they couldn't see the angel either. And he made the altar of incense of acacia wood. A cubit was the length thereof, and a cubit the breadth thereof, four square, and two cubits was the height thereof. The horns thereof were of one piece with it. And he overlaid it with pure gold, the top thereof. And mind you, this is, again, we're talking constantly about the character, you see. The ultimate character is to look on it, pure gold, you see. Our trials produce the pure gold in us, you see. So all those things are extremely meaningful. And if we just sit down and study all these items, they're not going to be boring. It's not something to be yawn at. They're all spiritual. That's what Paul was saying, you know. All those people that followed Moses in the wilderness were baptized into Moses. You know, he said to the Corinthians, you know, he said, you're ignorant. You see, they were the kind of people that would do these kind of things and get bored with because they don't understand it. You see, because they were ignorant. But the people that do understand that didn't have that attitude. And so I said, you know, our forefathers, 1 Corinthians 10, verses 1 to 4, they went through the wilderness, they were baptized into Moses and by the cloud, you see, and they ate spiritual food, they drank spiritual drink, and they followed the spiritual rock, and that rock was Christ. You see, everything was spiritual. Now that some people are carnal, you know, and they think about it only carnally, well, that's their problem. That doesn't mean that the law is not spiritual. Some people think, well, no, the letter of the law is in the Old Testament, the spirit of the law in the New Testament. Well, that's ignorance. Everything was spirit that proceeded out of the mouth of God. God said, my word are spirit. You see? But every law that He gives us has, yes, you know, the application of the letter, but it also has the application of the spirit. It's both. When you commit adultery, it's a physical act, but it's also a matter of the spirit. You know, the attitude that is in the heart, the lust, you know, the wrong desire, and all those things. So the two of them are always letter of the law and the spirit of the law. You know, when you get down on your knees and you pray before God, that's a physical act, you see. But there's also the spiritual element in it. So let's not misunderstand that. The spirit of the law has been there from the beginning of time. It was not introduced only 2,000 years ago. It's just the people being carnal, you know, all they looked at is just a physical aspect of the law and not the spirit. And that's where Christ came to magnify it to people who didn't know. The prophets did. Those who had the Holy Spirit understood the spirit of the law and they lived by it and walked by it. It's for the carnal-minded people, they did not. A lot of people don't understand that, and they think the Old Testament is all the letter of the law, and the New Testament is the spirit of the law. And that shows a lot of ignorance there on the part of many. And so in verse 26, you know, we read about the gold that is overlaying the top, that is, of the tabernacle, pure gold, and the sides thereof round about, and also the... You know, every aspect of it, and the horns, everything there was overlaid with crown, with the gold, pure gold. And he made unto it a crown of gold round about it, you know, in a sort of a frame all around it, you know, a crown, a decoration, a garland made of gold. You see, that's also called crown, but you know, the word for that is in this construction of these items is zer in Hebrew, not keter, which is the usual one used for a crown on the head of a man. And in contrast also to the crown that is on the high priest, which is called Nezer. But all of them are crowns with the same symbolism. And verse 27, and he made for it two golden rings under the crown thereof, upon the two ribs thereof, upon the two sides of it, for holders, for staves, wherewith to bear it. See, that's the only way you can carry it. So those instructions are given to the priest, you know, that's the only place where you can hold it. You know, if you do it somewhere, some other way, you know, you're going to be dead meat. So you don't play games with the law of God. Verse 28, and he made the staves of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold, and he made the holy anointing oil. You see, everything was consecrated, holy. You couldn't play, you know, with it and do whatever you want. And the pure incense of sweet spices after the art of the perfumer. Or, you know, in the King James, the old one said the apothecary. Perfumer, rokeach in Hebrew, from that word rokeach comes the pharmacist, you see, and when you go to the pharmacy, it's called Bet Mirkachat, the house of the pharmacy, and that comes from this, and you know, here they translated that perfumer. That's because, you know, the old pharmacist, you know, they use natural things, herbs, and those things smell good, you see, those are perfumes, so you can use them for both, healing and smelling good, you see, so that goes for both. That's the original pharmaceutical company, you see, so to speak, of the older days. And the priests were the pharmacists. Because oftentimes, you know, they've learned very well the art of healing, you know, according to the instructions of God, and they knew what kind of herbs, you know, hyssop and horseradish and all kinds of things like that to purify people's blood and wounds and things like that. And so they were the original pharmacists, and basically that was one of the functions of the priesthood, to be a pharmacist, you see, to be a physician. And that was one reason also why they received the tithe, to perform this function. Well, today ministers don't do it, and they want the whole tithe anyway. You know, they do a partial job, and they want the whole salary for, you know, for doing, you know, the little bit that they are doing in contrast. You see, well, that's how it happens when we depart so far from the law, we don't even know what being a Levite is anymore. And we'll come back to that later on, you know, when we study the purpose and the function of the tithe, and why do they receive it, and what are they going to perform in order to receive it. A lot of things that the priests had to perform in the Levites in order to earn, you know, that tithe, so to speak, even though God commanded it, yet they had to do their part. And so we are now in chapter 38, verse 1, and he made the altar of burnt offerings, that is the burnt offering, the altar, and again that was next to the incense altar, the altar of incense, that is, of acacia wood. 5 cubits was the length thereof, and 5 cubits the breadth thereof, 4 square, and 3 cubits the height thereof. And he made the horns thereof upon the 4 corners of it. Now, you have to understand that in the tabernacle, the people of Israel could not go into the tabernacle, only the Levites and the priests, because it was a small structure. And it's only when they came to the land and were able to have a larger area and had the temple, that's when there was a court of Israel, and Israel could go into the temple itself, but not into the area of the priests and the Levites and the area of the Holy of Holies. And that's basically what the tabernacle was all about. It did not include the area of Israel. They had to stand outside. There was a veil between them, you know, and the entrance of the tabernacle. They could not even look inside. And he made, verse 2, and he made the horns thereof upon the 4 corners of it. The horns thereof were of one piece with it, and he overlaid it with brass. And he made all the vessels, all the altar, the pots, and the shovels, and the basins, the flesh hooks, and the fire pans, all the vessels thereof made of brass. Because, you know, if it is gold, it's going to melt. So they have to make it of brass. So, you know, there was a purpose for it. And he made for the altar a grating of network of brass under the ledge round it beneath, reaching halfway up. And he cast 4 rings for the 4 ends of the grating of brass to be holders for the staves. Again, that too had to be carried. You couldn't just shove it around. And he made the staves of acacia wood, and you couldn't make your own choice. What would you want to use? God says, that's what I want. That's what they did. And overlaid them with brass, and he put the staves, and obviously they had to overlay them with brass, otherwise, you know, if coals, you know, fly here and there sometimes, it might get burned. So he put brass all around it. And he put the staves into the rings of the sides of the altar, wherewith to bury it. He made it hollow with plunks, and he made the laver of brass, and the base thereof of brass, of the mirrors of the serving women that did service at the door of the tent of meeting. A lot of people, again, don't realize that the women had their part in the tabernacle service itself. And that's why in the New Testament you see that the ministers, that is, the women also had their part in the ministry. That's why they were called deaconesses. And it's not a new office. Some people think the deacon and the deaconess is a new office among the people of God, and it was not, mind you, they were all Jews. Those were all, you know, functions that they had in the synagogue. People have no background, you know, they think, well, everything is new here, New Testament, new religion, new God, new this and new that, and that shows an awful lot of ignorance again. Well, that began from the temple, you know, the deaconess. This is what they would call them later on in Greek, deaconess. You know, in other words, there's men servant and there's a woman servant. And the women, obviously, were the wives of the Levites, you know, the priests. And so the women were there, and they had their function also, at the door of the tent of meeting. And he made the court for the south side southward. The hangings of the court were of fine twined linen, 100 cubits. The pillars were 20, and their sockets 20 of brass. The hooks of the pillars and the fillets, whatever, were of silver. And for the north side, 100 cubits, their pillars 20, and their sockets 20 of brass. You see, it may sound boring until you realize what would happen if you had only 19, 17. Ah, you have a big problem. Well, now that you have a big problem, you're going to pay attention to the details. And now you realize it's not boring after all, because for every little fraction there, somebody would have died. You see, and then it becomes very important. You see, and that's the way we should look at it. Everything, every detail is important, and that's how God wants our teachings and what we hear and what we learn and what we know, what goes into our mind, what goes into our belly. Every detail should be important, and we should never have that attitude or develop this attitude, oh well, just little things are not necessary for salvation, you know, just for the body, it's not necessary for salvation. You know, after all, Jesus Christ said, well, what enters into the body just goes out, no big deal. That's not what he was talking about. He's talking about the important things into the mind. If people don't worry about what goes on into the mind, but worry about what goes into the body, that's foolishness. Because what goes into the body, even though you transgress the law, still goes out. But what goes into your mind is going to produce a lot of bad. You see? And so he was not knocking out one, you know, in favor of the other. He was just showing that, you know, we should remember what is more important. But at the same time, as he told the Pharisees, you know, you do all the little things here and there. You should do the main things, the important things, but not leave the others undone. You see? And people don't pay attention to that. They just hear one half of the statement. And so all these things are extremely important. 11, and for the north side of the 100th cubit, their pillars 20 and their sockets 20 of brass, the hooks of the pillars of their fillets of silver. And for the west side were hangings of 50 cubits, their pillars 10 and their sockets 10. The hooks of the pillars and their fillets of silver. And for the east side eastward, 50 cubits, the hangings for the one side of the gate were 15 cubits, their pillars 3 and their sockets 3. And so for the other side, on the hand that is on this hand and that hand by the gate of the court, were hangings of 15 cubits, their pillars 3 and their sockets 3. And all the hangings of the court round about were of fine twined linen. And everything had to be top quality. And mind you, details are extremely important with God. And so this is one thing that we should learn as we study things. Details are important for God, you see. And when you are raised that way, like the priest, you know, had to be made aware how important every tiny little details are, they never developed this attitude, oh well, you know, it's not necessary for salvation. So you see why we have developed this attitude? Because we have not been taught the law of God. And that every word, not some, not only the major ones, not the important ones, not like some people say, well, the law means the Ten Commandments, which it does not. You see, because the law means the Torah, and the Torah includes the totality of the body of teaching, which include as a crown, you know, the ten oracles of God. That's a crown. You see, but you don't have a crown hanging, you know, in the air without a body under it, you know, that has all kind of the other parts of the body. And a lot of people have forgotten that. You see, so they invent their own terminology when they think about the law of God is the Ten Commandments. And that's only the crown. That's the foundation of the crown. Verse 16, now again, and well, actually we go to verse 18. And the screen for the gate of the court was work of the weaver in color. In other words, God didn't want people to peek in. That was private. And there were different colors, you know, colorful, and not drab, you know, not gloomy. And of purple, and scarlet, and fine twined linen. Now, if you were standing there and looking at it, would you think it's boring? Of course not. You see, you're going to be extremely amazed and appreciative what you see. And 20 cubits was the length, and the height in the breadth was 5 cubits, and answerable to the hangings of the court. In other words, they had to be synchronized with other things. And that's again, you know, with the body of Christ. All of us must be synchronized, and when we all study the same law, we're going to be synchronized, but when we don't, we study our own things, obviously we're not going to be answerable to the other parts. And so when God, you know, gets to the end, he's going to put all these parts together, and he looks here and looks there, and he finds all kind of things that don't fit. How is he going to build a, you know, a tabernacle or a temple out of misfits? A lot of us, unfortunately, are falling into that category because we are not all abiding by the same word of God. You see, we have our own interpretations or meanings, or, you know, we decide what we obey, what we don't. Verse 19, and their pillars were 4, and their sockets 4 of brass, their hooks of silver, and the overlaying of the capitals and their fillets of silver, and all the pins of the pins of the tabernacle and of the court round about were of brass. So everything had to be according to instruction. And now we continue with chapter 38 against verse 21. In between we had the reading of the prophets. You know how it is in the synagogue, they read the law and they read the prophets. And the part of the prophets that they read here is what Solomon was doing with the temple, you know, the temple of Solomon. And so, obviously, they make it, you know, in other words, of the same subject. When they read the prophets, it has to have a link to the reading of the law. And in other words, it's answerable to the reading of the law. It's not, you know, totally out of sync. And so, even then, you see that the Jews, when they're reading their prophets, they made sure that everything matches, that is linked, that has, you know, a similar subject. So we continue now with verse 21. these are the accounts of the tabernacle. And the word for tabernacle here is Mishkan. You see, you know, they use tabernacle for tent, they use tabernacle for Mishkan. Mishkan means a dwelling place, you see, which is the inside, minus, you see, that does not include the tent. And yet, everything is called tabernacle, and when it comes to the booth that God told Israel to construct, they called it tabernacle too in English, and that's how they confuse people. That's confusion. That's what God says in the future, and Zephaniah is going to give people a pure language, so they're not going to be confused about His word anymore, create their own doctrines and religions. So these are the accounts of the Mishkan, you see, not tabernacle, that was, you know, the tent around it, but the whole thing was also called Mishkan, you know, just like the temple, including the walls, was also called the temple. Well, I think we are running out of space here. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.